The Heat Doctor on Kerry Today, brought to you in association with Boyles of Killorglin, the home of quality.
Good morning to you, David. How are you?
Good morning, Tressa. Good morning to all the listeners. I hope everyone's well.
We are indeed. We are indeed well. We have questions flying in for you as usual, and I will just I will get to the very first one, the question that has come in, and it is to do with creosote. Okay. This year, David, this person says, I have a problem with creosote dripping down from above outside of the pipe going into the stove. It's dark black, sticky liquid oozing from the left side only of the pipe above. I'm unsure as to who to get and what to do. To date, I have encountered a few businesses with expensive quotes. I want to rectify the problem as soon as possible without having to spend a fortune or being ripped off. Looking forward to finding a solution. Thank you, Helen Courtney. David, can you help Helen?
Good morning to Helen. Unfortunately, yeah, this can be an issue with solid fuel fireplaces. The creosote buildup can happen. A couple of different reasons, I suppose, stress on that one. And one of the most common ones is damp timber, damp fuel being burnt, and it leaves off a chemical compound which creates creosote within the chimney or within the flue liners of the chimney. So I suppose that's the technical side of things. In relation to what to do with it, it's something that should be dealt with fairly quickly, I think, and annual maintenance can prevent this from happening. One of the most, I suppose, easy and straightforward things to do is to clean the chimney. But unfortunately there for Helen, if the chimney has been cleaned for a while, or if there was a year mist, or if indeed there's water coming into the chimney or anything else like that, it can prove a little bit more expensive. And I'm hoping that those quotes are not too expensive. But, you know, it depends on what job has to be carried out, or how old the chimney and how old the house is, and indeed how old the fuel burning appliance is. Now, I'm not going to scare anyone or scare Helen indeed by saying, look, it shouldn't be used, the fireplace shouldn't be used, but I suppose this is something that shouldn't be there, so it should be dealt with. And you don't want any downdrafts or smoke or soot or carbon monoxide building up in the rooms where that fire appliance is. So look, pop into Boyles maybe, Helen, that'll be a starting point. They should be able to recommend some good chimney sweeps, some good cleaners. That'll be a starting point, I think, and hopefully it's just a chimney clean that will get you get that sorted. Secondly, I suppose, is to, you know, possibly, you know, make sure that the fuel that you're burning is of good quality and that there's no dampness in it, stored correctly, etc. And I guess lastly, then, you know, I always mention when it comes to fireplaces, trash, or any fuel burning appliances, health and safety is my first and foremost, and that is that there's a working smoke alarm and or carbon monoxide alarm within the room, and indeed throughout the house, just to make sure there's no issues going forward. But look, for Helen there, unfortunately, it's just something that should be dealt with fairly quickly before the winter comes in. I suppose touching on that, Tressa, we all know the winter is coming upon us, and this is the maintenance time for those chimneys and for those oil boilers and all boilers and heating systems to get them checked over. The plumbers are on the road, flat to the makers, getting the services carried out, and people are very good, I suppose, to see that the dates are on their appliances to get them checked. So look, just a maintenance issue for now, get it checked out. But if it's something more serious, it's definitely something should be dealt with, and avoid using that appliance until it is dealt with.
So, David, your first piece of advice to Helen would be to get the chimney cleaned, and then you'll get a better picture as to how much work needs to be done and the possible costs involved.
Exactly. That's a starting point. And I mean, I suppose that's a cost that's associated with anyone that is carrying out that work. So I suppose, look, it can be individual. It depends on the amount of work that's involved in it. It depends what the appliance is, if it's a stove range and or open fire, etc., back boiler. So that's a starting point. And I suppose, look, you know, going from there, by doing that, you'll figure out fairly quickly what's happening. And as I said, look, it can be a common thing with chimneys that there's moisture going through the caps or anything else like that. So look, it's an overall general inspection. Do a clean and then assess it after that. You know, simple checks. But look, it's up to the qualified or experienced individual to do that work and to do it correctly to make sure that the fire burning appliance or solid fuel burning appliance is going to operate correctly for the future for Helen.
Well, Helen, thank you for getting in touch, and I hope that helps with your problem and that it won't be too costly. But as David was saying there, first port of call would be to get the chimney cleaned. You were saying there, David, and obviously it makes good sense as we're at the start of September. Time of year for maintenance, for checking oil boilers, for checking our heating systems. Is it?
Yeah.
What general tips would you have? And does one always have to call someone out to check everything? Say, if you've had something checked 6 months ago, do you need to call somebody out to check it again? Or are there any checks that you yourself can do?
Yeah, I suppose, look, there's a few simple checks that homeowners can carry out, Tressa, but I suppose we'll work from the in backwards on that one, and that would be that I would suggest and strongly, I suppose, advise, and it is part of regulations and part of the appliance regulations that qualified individuals that carry out the maintenance and or service works for any appliance that is fuel burning, solid fuel, gas, oil, or indeed the modern heat pumps, etc. You know, it's not that you need a qualified electrician, but you need a qualified technician that is skilled in the maintenance of heat pumps. Most plumbers would be registered. So for gas, it's an RGI registration, that, and that's a compliance regulation that has to be in place. For oil boilers, there's off-take, and there's also, I suppose, just the plumbing experience. But I guess with that as well, there's analyzers that are used which give printouts of information as to how efficient and how coefficient your boiler is working. So these are all big terms and big things, but I suppose for a homeowner, Tressa, I suppose I can say for any of the new boilers installed in the last 5 to 7 years, there's what we call a passport for the boiler. So there's an actual boiler passport that comes with it. It's like the maintenance book that goes in the glove box. It's exactly the same as the maintenance glove maintenance booklet that goes in the glove box of your car. And I suppose there's information that gets sent back to the supplier of, for example, the oil boiler to start out with. And then it's an annual, I suppose, maintenance. And there's ways of making sure that the boiler is maintained over the years. It's like buying a second-hand car, Tressa. Once you have all the information, you're getting something better. But for homeowners themselves, I suppose general tips I would say, you know, is obviously the starting point would be setting the date in the diary, or checking the front of the boiler, checking the front of the appliance that there's a date on it for its next scheduled maintenance or indeed repair, or if there's any major works that need to be carried out that it's noted. You know, it is September, Tressa. I mean, the last couple of nights have dipped down in temperature, so you know, checking your thermostats. There's no point, I suppose, in the middle of the day when it's up to 18, 20 degrees, having a thermostat set, you know, quite high, that's bringing on a boiler to set to a higher temperature. So, you know, there's simple things that can happen that will start making the house efficient before we get into the heart of the winter and want all that heat within the house. But again, if your appliance is not working properly or serviced regularly and maintained, you're going to be in an issue in the heart of the winter, which is what you don't want, because you want that appliance working properly for you for the winter time. So, look, make sure everything's, I suppose, you know, there's no leaks visible, that the electrical appliances are working properly. There's identification lights that says they turn on, you know, that your pumps are working properly, that there's heat distributing throughout the house. Those are all simple things. But I guess it still goes back to, if you don't have an appliance that's generating the heat for you, you're not going to have heat to generate throughout the house, Tressa.
Well, we've lots of questions coming in for you, David. A listener says, this might not be in your field, David, but I said I'd ask. I'm in my 50s, I live alone and I'm on disability allowance. Would I be entitled to get a front door, as my own is timber and drafty?
Good morning to that listener. Okay, it's not that it's not in my realm, I suppose, but there is a lot of questions about grants on doors and windows that we field all the time. And unfortunately, through one-stop shops on the SEI side of things is the best way I can recommend homeowners to get their doors and windows replaced. But that's a full house change. I would advise maybe for that homeowner to go onto the Kerry Coco website. There is housing grants and adaption grants, etc., available housing for housing aid for older grants, mobility aid grants, and there is housing adaption grants, etc. There may be a situation with that the homeowner may be able to avail of possibly even having other works upgraded within the house. I know they mentioned they're on a disability allowance, so there may be a situation there that there could be other things that homeowner could apply for that they could be missing out on. And indeed, with that application, the front door could be replaced as well also. I know, Tressa, look, front door replacements can be quite expensive. It depends on the size of the door, the style, the finish, etc. So maybe, you know, Kerry Coco, have a look there. There's some download application forms that are quite easy to fill in. I know there's a stamp from the local social welfare office required. And I suppose failing that, Tressa, look, it's with a combination of that application and getting on to the local councillor and local TD if possible, and hopefully that homeowner will get that door sorted.
Now, a caller has an open fire with a back boiler. She can't close the door of the room as there'll be a bad smell of fumes. How can this problem be solved?
I'm going to say straight away, ventilation. Back boiler open fire, or indeed if there's a smell of fumes or a downdraft of smoke, or if there's even some people say when the wind is coming from a certain direction, the room can fill with smoke. But for that homeowner, I'm going to suggest straight away ventilation is the first part to start with. Making sure that there's no, well, start that there is a vent within the room. The compliance for fireplaces is an open 5-inch vent that's permanently open so that the fire can draw the air through that vent. If there is a vent in the room, then make sure that there's no blockage in it. And again, that there's no, that the air is freely coming through. And again, I suppose it goes back to our first question from Helen, which was to make sure that the chimney is clean, that the maintenance is carried out, Trasa, which is the theme of things this morning, and that the fire, you know, is going to work safely. Lastly, again, and I mentioned it for the second time, is health and safety is making sure there's a working smoke alarm and or heat alarm and a working carbon monoxide alarm within the room.
Now, I'm building a new house and I'm wondering if the heat doctor, if you, David, can explain what the air-to-water system involves.
Okay, well, that's about 6 hours of a conversation I'm quite happy to have with that homeowner. But very briefly, I'm going to say that, fortunately, the best of luck with a new house. Good luck to them. It's always an interesting road to go down, and it's hopefully a joyful experience for them, and that they get a good result in the finish with everything they want. But with new regulations in place, Trasa, we have, again, situations where we're looking at the more modern heating systems and air-to-water heating systems, and the ground-source heat pumps are the modern way of installations, and they become a compliance regulation, again, for new houses. So briefly to describe it, I guess, it's a form of creating heat within your house, creating energy to heat your house. Very, very briefly, I suppose, that homeowner unfortunately has to put one in because gas boilers and oil boilers are being phased out by 2026. The best way I could suggest is if they have a plan of the house and bring it along to boils again, they'd be able to do a design on the house for the installation of a heat pump and, I guess, give you the best idea of some running costs on the overall energy of the house, etc. But I always say to people, if they think of a fridge working as taking the air outside, circulating around a pipe and cooling the food, a heat pump does the opposite. A heat pump takes the air outside, circulates it around the pipe with a compressed gas inside it, generates energy and heats the house. Then after that, it's a whole lot of technical stuff that you don't really need to know. I don't claim to know it all, Trasa, but I definitely know a lot about them. And I guess the only thing as well that I always say to people is, for every one part of cost you put into an oil boiler, for example, you get one part out. For every one part of energy that a heat pump generates, it gets three parts out. So they are super efficient, super modern, and a very, very good way of heating the house. With a new house, I guess that homeowner has the opportunity to install underfloor heating. If it's a two-story indeed, you know, they can put radiators upstairs, underfloor heating downstairs. It's a big misconception that a lot of people have that you have to have underfloor heating. And we come across that a lot with retrofitting. So look,
And coincidentally, David, somebody sent in a separate comment question asking, is underfloor heating worth installing when building a new home?
So absolutely, I'm going to say yes to that. There's a lot of reasons for that, but it depends. It depends on a lot of things. It depends on what screed you're putting on top, what height, what depth, liquid screed, sand and cement, or even a concrete floor, what type of insulation you can get underneath it. It goes from the foundations up, Trasa, if it's a raft foundation, strip foundation. There's a lot there that an engineer is going to dictate in regards to what the specifications are before you start. And after that, having the correct insulation in place means that you would have an efficient system by running underfloor heating. There's for and against, and a lot of houses work both ways. As I said, with a two-story house, for example, sometimes you can have underfloor downstairs and radiators upstairs, or indeed if it's a solid floor on the first floor, you can have underfloor heating in both floors, or indeed radiators on both floors. It comes down to design, which is key and very, very important to start out with anyone with a new house, is whoever you are buying your heat pump from or wherever you're getting your heat pump from, hopefully Boyles in Killorglan, come along with your plans. Give them the plans. They will be able to do up a full design. I know Padraig is doing that fully inside in Boyles and he loves doing it. He's going to kill me for that. But I guess the answer is that you will get a specific design to your house, giving you the most efficient way to run it. And more often than not, underfloor heating is the way to go.
Okay, very briefly, because I think this is serious. Someone says my back boiler is leaking. Do I need to replace it?
Yes is the answer to that, but don't run that fireplace until you've had someone check it and make sure that it's working properly. Unfortunately, if it's leaking, it can be a mechanical breakdown, so please don't use the fireplace. Get it replaced, get it repaired, and maybe consideration for upgrades. Like I always say to people, if they're replacing something before they do take that jump or that leap, check, see that there's grants available for any other upgrades that you can carry out to the house.
Thank you, everyone whose questions we didn't get to for David. We will hold on for October, first Friday in October.